Testing in the House Chamber, Legislative Day 158.
The House will come to order. Members will take their seats. Visitors will retire from the chamber. The Sergeant-at-Arms will close the doors. Members and guests are asked to please silence all electronic devices. This afternoon's prayer will be offered by Representative Goodwin. We'd ask our members and our guests in the gallery to please stand for the prayer and to remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance thereafter. Representative Goodwin.
Let us pray. Our gracious Heavenly Father, we know in your word that you have the guidance for us. Today, Father, we claim one verse, in all thy ways acknowledge you, and you will direct our path. Father, may we think about that as we discuss the issues at hand today, and as we vote, and as we continue about our business for the people of the state of North Carolina. We thank you for that, Lord. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Gentleman from Caldwell, Representative Hall, is recognized for motion.
Mr. Speaker, the journal for November 16th has been examined and found to be correct. I move that it be approved as written.
Representative Hall moves the journal for November 16th be approved as written. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it, and the journal is so approved as written. Ratification of bills and resolutions. The clerk will read.
The enrolling clerk reports the following bill duly ratified for presentation to the governor. Senate Bill 308. An act to prevent delay in the insurance of temporary certificates of occupancy and to clarify electric wiring requirement references and to modify one or two family dwelling residential departments fire apparatus access road requirements.
Chapter bills will be noted. Members, a few recognitions the chair would like to make. First off, on motion of Representative Raymond Smith of Wayne County, the chair is happy to extend the courtesies of the gallery to Tracy Smith, who is his daughter and also a senior at North Carolina A&T State University. Tracy, where are you? I want to welcome you over here on the side. Thanks for being with us. On motion of Representative Soka of Cumberland County, Representative Bradford of Mecklenburg County, Representative Bell of Wayne County, and Representative Wheatley of Cumberland County, the chair is happy to extend the courtesies of the gallery to Larry Coleman, commander of the North Carolina Veterans Council, here in support of today's conference reports that include House Bill 83 to eliminate the state income tax for military retirees. Would y'all please stand so we can welcome you up here on the right. Thank you very much. The gentleman from Hope County, Representative Pierce, is recognized to send forth a representative statement that will be read in its entirety upon adjournment and spread upon the journal. And the gentleman at this time has the floor to speak to a point of personal privilege, and the chair would ask that the House come to order, that members take their seats. Representative Pierce, the gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and ladies and gentlemen, and all those who are gathered with us this afternoon. I have the privilege and the honor to just talk a little while about a good friend, former sheriff of Hope County, who we know just a couple weeks ago crossed the bar. And we're just delighted to have his family and the sheriff, the speaker will introduce them after a while. Many of you are very familiar with Sheriff Peterkin, who walked these very halls, who was in and out of our office on behalf of law enforcement here in the state of North Carolina. He was very excited about the work that he was called to do as president of the Sheriff's Association. And this very pen that I have on today, ladies and gentlemen, was one given to me, talks to the Sheriff's Association. When we think about his work, not only in Hope County, but across the state, And he even ended up with recognition across the whole United States on his interview during a very trying time in our country. Sheriff Hubert Peterkin. He's the only one that I know. If there's another sheriff, you can let me know before I leave, that was a doctor. He went on to school to have a doctorate to help his work in the sheriff's office. There are few left that we would consider high sheriffs. And sadly, this group gets smaller. A few weeks ago, as we know, with the passing of our sheriff, our beloved sheriff, Hubert Peterkin, our state has been tragically sorrowed by the passing of three sheriffs this year, and as we remember all of them. Today I have come to honor my friend and one of North Carolina's finest sheriffs. When all of our eyes laid victim to the death of George Floyd, it was Sheriff Peterkin who stood up before this nation and encouraged his, as he always said, my guys. When he talked about the sheriff's department, the policemen, he would always use that term, my guys. And he was always fighting for what he said, my guys. There was a lot of legislation that passed through here. You all remember that he would come and advocate whether he liked the bill, he didn't like the bill. And on most occasions, we all agreed with him that it would be something good for law enforcement and for our sheriffs here in North Carolina. I'm just reminded, just a statement, that he was out of my office, and I remember when he would come along with the other sheriffs, and he would always be the first one to speak up. The rest would sometimes stand back and allow Sheriff Peterkin to have the floor to talk with us about any particular legislation. I would ask this body, Mr. Speaker, if there's any legislation that any of you plan to file again, that it might be a bill that would mirror the work that Sheriff Peterkin did, and that we could name that bill in his honor, if this body would consider that. If any of you, any legislation, I think that might be in order to do just that. So I ask that you would consider that. Sheriff Peterkin was excited about the idea of finally getting a courthouse in Hope County, one that would speak to the needs of law enforcement and to the citizens of North of Hope County. I'm just going to put this plug in. In this budget, General Assembly just passed, or will pass, that idea became a reality. Our state is a better place because of Hubert Peterkin, who lived, who worked, who served, and did a great job for North Carolina. One of the finest sheriffs that I know, and I know quite a few. They all do what they do, but Sheriff Peterkin had a heart for this job. He really, somebody was speaking, his son was speaking at the service. If anybody was sick in the community, he was not a pastor, but he was one of the first to go to the house. By the time the pastor would get there, Sheriff Peterkin had already been there. And any other needs in the community, he was that type of sheriff. And I commended him today. I'm just delighted to be able to stand and speak on behalf of my friend, Sheriff Hubert Peterkin. Mr. Speaker, there are a few other sheriffs before you move that would like to make a comment, and a few others, if you will allow that privilege, I would really appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Speaker, for allowing us on this busy day to recognize this very fine individual in the state of North Carolina. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Representative Pierce. The gentleman from Pender, Representative Smith, is recognized to speak to a point of personal privilege.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As Representative Pierce said, Sheriff Peterkin was the third sitting sheriff to die this year, and at some point, to me, it just didn't seem real. Just losing folks who I had known for years. And I appreciate him bringing this forth today. Sheriff Peterkin was the association president 2 years before I was. So we ended up serving for many years together after you're president on the executive committee. Believe it or not, sheriffs didn't agree on everything. So in our executive committee meeting sometimes, we discuss things, we debate things, kind of like we do here. But when we got too far off the path, when we got too far down a dirt road we shouldn't have been on, Sheriff Peterkin would always bring us back. And he did it, the one word that I thought of, and this kind of exemplifies him, he was fierce. When he brought us back, he didn't say, hey guys, you know, we need to this is not how we need to be looking at it. We need to look at it this way. He'd stand up and say, fellas, what are we talking about? That's not what we need to talk about. We need to talk about this. And he would bring us back down to earth where we needed to be, and I always appreciated that. He was a role model for all the sheriffs in the state. I can tell you that. And as if you've ever known him or seen him or met him, he was probably the best dressed sheriff in the state too. He knew how to represent. He was a dear friend, and I've known him, I knew him for years. Hope County will miss Sheriff Hubert Peterkin. North Carolina will miss Sheriff Hubert Peterkin. And I'm going to miss him too. And I thank you for your time.
The gentleman from McDowell, Representative Green, is recognized to speak to a point of personal privilege.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you, gentlemen, for bringing forth this recognition for my friend, Hubert Peterkin, and for, I'm sure if you're in Hope County, he was your friend as well. I was in a lot of those meetings that, Representative Smith was talking about, and it was always a concern of his to doing the right thing by the folks of Hope County, and that I have no doubt because he served so many years. But his influence, stretched way beyond the boundaries of Hope County and throughout North Carolina and probably the South. One of the things that I can remember that he initiated, was key in bringing forth was as a president of the Sheriff's Association was a training program that sheriff's officers could go throughout the state of North Carolina and work with churches, to improve their church security, which, during a time when there were church shootings, going on throughout the Southeast and actually through the nation, was concerned about the safety of those worshiping. And I'm sure Hope County is going to miss Sheriff Peterkin. I know North Carolina will, and I will as well. And thank you for bringing that forward. And certainly want to extend our sympathies and our prayers, to his family. Thank you.
Gentleman from Robson, Representative Graham, recognized to speak to a point of personal privilege.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I feel compelled to speak, honoring Sheriff Peterkin, our neighbor in Hope County. I did not have the interactions that Representative Pierce had, but I did have a chance to interact with the sheriff on a number of occasions. I just want to say that I was impressed each time I had an opportunity to engage with him. He was a man who was very proud of his profession. He was proud to wear the badge, but I can honestly say he wore that badge not as a symbol of power, but as a symbol of helping his community. And I think he did a great job of helping his community outside of law enforcement. And he left us too soon. And I just give my condolences to the family. His memory will live for a long time. And I can just say I'm very pleased to be able to stand and honor him on this special occasion. And just to the family, I know you're proud, and he leaves with you great memories. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Sir. Gentleman from Cumberland, Representative Lucas, is recognized to speak to a point of personal privilege.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Sheriff Peterkin was the consummate law enforcement officer. He was in law enforcement, but if you really didn't see him in uniform, you would have thought that he was an ambassador, because he was just that kind of person. We've heard the expressions that he worked in Hope County, and he did for a long time, but few people know that he was a native of Cumberland County. We sent them a great one. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Gentleman from Randolph, Representative McNeil, is recognized to speak to a point of personal privilege.
Thank you. I rise and give condolences to the family of Sheriff Peterkin. Many of those that have spoke already knew him for years. I only met him when he became president of the Sheriff's Association. He would come here to Raleigh quite often when he was president that year with Eddie Caldwell and others to advocate for things that were interesting for the sheriff's offices and law enforcement and things that were important for this state. Many of you know that I retired from a sheriff's office, Randolph County Sheriff's Office, and so I was chief deputy for 19 years, and I know Sheriff Peterkin was sheriff of Hope County for 19 years. I had 32 years in service, and he had 34. Anytime a member of law enforcement dies suddenly like that, it is a sad day for the whole law enforcement community. I would just like to end by saying, in reading, Representative Pierce asked me a couple of weeks ago if I would say a few things. So I kind of read up and looked at some of the background. And one thing that people have not mentioned, the other speakers, is that Sheriff Peterkin wrote a book called How to Stop for a Cop. And so I just commend Sheriff Peterkin. The time that I knew him was brief, but he will certainly be missed by the Hope County community and his family. And again, my condolences.
The gentleman from Cumberland, Representative Richardson, is recognized to speak to a point of personal privilege.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I'll be very brief, but not taking the opportunity to state the importance of this man would be a tragedy. One of my favorite quotes is that wise people plant trees under whose shade they will never sit. Sheriff Peterkin lived that saying. He was an active member of Lewis Chapel Church in Cumberland County, and he brought children to that church. He made it a point to work with kids and to try to get them onto the right path. He spent hours and hours in race relations. He promoted professional law enforcement like no other. He planted trees under whose shade he would never sit, but there will be many and many of people in that region that will enjoy that cool shade because of the efforts of that wonderful man. Thank you.
Sir, thank you. Lady from Mecklenburg, Representative Logan, recognized to speak to a point of personal privilege.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I give my condolences to the family of Sheriff Peterkin. I met him a couple of times at conferences, that law enforcement conferences, and one of my former colleagues sent me the information of his passing. I just happened to be in D.C. during the week of Police Week, and they sent me it over my phone, and I couldn't believe it because it had just been a month or two when Representative Pierce had the sheriff in my office. And we sat in the office and we talked and we laughed, and at one time we laughed so loudly that my LA came in to see what was going on. And we sat there, and of course I'm a big lover of cars, and he talked about his two Corvettes. And I let him know that I had the V-Series CTS Corvette. Cadillac with over 600 horses. So we sat there, we laughed about that. And I reminded him that the first time that we met at a law enforcement conference, that I told him, I said, you know, you dress like Steve Harvey. And he said, au contraire, Steve Harvey dresses like me. And I said, well, excuse me, sir. I stand corrected. But he was a good man. He was easy to talk to, always willing to help. I heard of good things that he did in his community. I know some of my former colleagues worked in his department down in Hope County, and he will certainly be missed. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Members, on motion of Representative Pierce of Hope County, the chair is honored to welcome a number of special guests and would ask when we call your name to please stand so that we can properly welcome you. First of all, Mrs. Della Peterkin, who is the wife of Sheriff Hubert Peterkin, also joined by Antonio Peterkin, who is his son, Hope County Commissioner and Chairman Harry Sutherland, Hope County Commissioner Lonnie Baldwin, Hope County Sheriff Roderick Virgil, Mr. Jamal Shabane, Ms. Thomasina Pinnell and Mr. Frank Bowen, who are here with us today. Please accept our condolences on the loss of a fine man, and please know that you and your family remain in our thoughts and prayers. I'd ask my colleague to please join us in welcoming these guests with us today. Again, thank you all for being with us. We do appreciate the sacrifice and his service, and please know you will continue to remain in our thoughts and prayers. Representative Hall is recognized and forth committee report. The clerk will read.
Representative Hall, rules, calendar, and operations of the House committee report, Senate Bill 326, Election Day Integrity Act, favorable.
Calendar for tomorrow.
House Bill 259. Election Integrity Act, favorable committee substitute number 2, unfavorable committee substitute number 1.
Committee substitute number 1 is placed on the unfavorable calendar. Committee substitute number 2 will be placed on the calendar for tomorrow.
Senate Bill 219, Surveyor Licensure Education Requirements, favorable House Committee substitute, unfavorable Senate Committee substitute.
Senate Committee substitute is placed on the unfavorable calendar. The House Committee substitute. Chair may add that to today's calendar. We'll just ask the majority leader and the minority leader to concur, to confer on that. Looks like it's a bill about surveyor licensure and education requirements. So if we need to move tomorrow, we will, but just ask the folks to check with the chair. If it's non-controversial, we'll put it on today. Representative Hall is recognized to send forth additional committee report. Clerk will read.
Representative Hall, rules, calendar, and operations of the House committee report, Senate Bill 725. Prohibit private money in elections, administration, favorable House committee substitute, unfavorable original bill.
The original bill is placed on the unfavorable calendar. The House committee substitute will be calendar for tomorrow.
Senate Bill 724, expand access to voter ID and voting, favorable House committee substitute, unfavorable Senate committee substitute.
Senate committee substitute is placed on the unfavorable calendar. The House committee substitute will be calendar for tomorrow. Chair has been informed that Senate Bill 729, the Surveyor Licensure Bill, is non-controversial. Therefore, the objection, Chair directs the bill be added to today's calendar. 219, correct, sir. Representative Brendan Jones, recognized to send forth conference report. Clerk will read.
Conference report, House Bill 165. To the President of the Senate, the Speaker of the House of Representatives. The conferees appointed to resolve the difference between the Senate and the House of Representatives on House Bill 165, a bill to be entitled an act to make various changes to the transportation and motor vehicle laws of the state. Senate Transportation Committee substitute adopt 9-22-21, fifth edition engrossed 10-6-21, submit the following report. The conferees recommend that the Senate and House of Representatives adopt this report. Date conferees approved report, November 17th, 2021. Conferees for the Senate, Senator Sawyer Chair, Senators Britt and Harrington. Conferees for the House of Representatives, Representative Brendan Jones Chair, Representative Shepard, Eiler, and Sain.
Calendar and without objection, today's calendar is ordered. Mr. Court members, Chair directs that Senate Bill 470, the short title is the North Carolina Regulatory Sandbox. That bill will be withdrawn from the Committee on Rules. The bill is referred to the Committee on Alcohol Beverage Control, and Chair is going to strike the serial referral to the Rules Committee as well. Representative Hall is recognized to send forth one additional committee report. The clerk will read.
Representative Hall, Rules, Calendar, Operations of the House Committee report. A bill to be entitled an act to make modifications to the appointments made in the 2021 Appointments Bill and to appoint persons to various public offices upon the recommendation of the Speaker of the House of Representatives and the President Pro Tem of the Senate. Favorable for introduction.
Without objection, the clerk will file the bill and assign a number. Without objection, introduction to bills and resolutions, the clerk will read.
Representatives Rules Calendar Operations of the House, House Bill 978, a bill to be entitled an act to make modifications to the appointments made in the 2021 appointments bill and to appoint persons to various public offices upon the recommendation of the Speaker of the House of Representatives and the President Pro Tem of the Senate.
Members, this is a mini appointments bill to fill some seats on some resignations we had to a couple of boards. So calendar without objection, day's calendar. So ordered. Message from the Senate, the clerk will read.
Special message from the Senate. Mr. Speaker, it is ordered that a message be sent to the House of Representatives with the information that the Senate adopts the report of the conferees for House Bill 91, Conference Committee Substitute, a bill to be entitled an act to restructure oversight of public high school interscholastic athletic activities to ensure accountability for fair play. When appropriate action has been taken by both chambers, the bill will be ordered and rolled. Respectfully, Sarah Holland.
Noted.
Mr. Speaker, it is ordered that the message be sent to the House of Representatives with the information that the Senate adopt the report of the conference for House Bill 165, Conference Committee Substitute, a bill to be entitled an act to make various changes to the transportation and motor vehicle laws of the state. When the appropriate action has been taken by both chambers, the bill will be ordered and rolled. Respectfully, Sarah Holland.
Noted.
Mr. Speaker, it is ordered that the message be sent to the House of Representatives with the information that the Senate adopt the report of the conferees for Senate Bill 105, Conference Report, a bill to be entitled an act to make base budget appropriations for current operations of state agencies, departments, and institutions for other purposes. When the appropriate action has been taken by both chambers, the bill will be ordered and rolled. Respectfully, Sarah Holland.
Noted. Calendar, Senate Bill 105, the clerk will read.
Conference report. Senate Bill 105, Representatives B. Jackson, Harrington, and Heiss. A bill to be entitled 2021 Appropriations Act. General Assembly of North Carolina acts.
The gentleman from Forsyth, Representative Lambeth, is recognized for a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Motion to adopt the conference report, Senate Bill 105, and debate the motion.
The gentleman has moved that the House to adopt the conference report to Senate Bill 105, and the gentleman has the floor to debate the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, the appropriations chair started meeting and working on this budget plan way back in February. It was cold, probably some little snow on the ground. And here we are, November 17th, 2021, and we finally have a conference report. Who would have imagined we would still be here in November? Congratulations. But as I was thinking about this historic day, a day you are all a part of, whether you like this conference report or not, it is surely a day you will remember. I think of this budget parallel to a fine wine that was months or years in the aging process, aging to perfection. This conference report has simply aged to perfection. Today we're pleased to bring to this body a conference report that will improve every community in this state and the lives of every citizen. In the spirit of this Thanksgiving season, this budget is the product of much time, hard work, and the invaluable contributions from our appropriations chairs, members of both chambers, the governor, a variety of stakeholders, and our excellent staff. I want to particularly thank the speaker's staff and the central staff here who are with us in the back of the chamber for shepherding us through this very lengthy and challenging process. If everyone would join with me and give them a rousing round of applause for their work. particularly want to personally thank the Democratic members of the body who worked with us through the process to ensure we would have a bipartisan budget that will be enacted into law. These members worked across the aisle, showing everyone in this state that we do have leaders willing to craft bipartisan legislation for the greater good of the people we serve. This is a once-in-a-generation budget. The state of North Carolina has never invested more money in education. The state has never invested more in health and human services. This state has never invested more in infrastructure and our communities. And this state has never saved more for the future and returned more money to hardworking taxpayers and families. Everyone in this state benefits. Let me point out just a few of the highlights. And I would remind you that this budget is retroactive and effective July 1. I've been asked that question about these raises. Were they effective July or January? They are effective retroactive to July 1. Over this biennium, 5% raises for state employees and teachers, a 5% bonus for state retirees, a $1,000 bonus for state employees and teachers, and an additional $500 bonus for those making under $75,000 per year. Teachers will be eligible for an additional $1,300 in bonuses from federal and state funding. $100 million is being provided to low-wealth schools, allowing for an additional 1.7% supplement for teachers in those counties. Non-certified local school and community college personnel will have a $15 an hour minimum wage. Historically, black colleges and universities are receiving the single most significant funding increase in the history of their schools, including doctoral and engineering programs, new classrooms and labs, an extension of the North Carolina Promise Program to the Fayetteville State University campus. Healthcare has been the focus and passion of my career, and this budget provides the single largest investment in our healthcare system ever. $275 million for home and community-based services, $15 an hour minimum wage for direct support workers for those who serve our elderly and our most medically fragile and their families. 1,000 new innovation waiver slots to serve the intellectually and developmentally disabled. A full year of postpartum services for new moms. $150 million to remove lead and asbestos from schools and child care centers. And this budget establishes a joint committee to study and recommend legislation to address healthcare access and Medicaid expansion. The state fiscal recovery fund appropriates an additional $5.7 billion in federal funds, in addition to what we've appropriated over this past year. $133 million in bonuses for direct care workers, $170 million for workforce housing, $500 million for business recovery grants, grants for the victims of human trafficking and domestic violence, $50 million for food banks and food security, hundreds of millions for agriculture, land preservation, and our parks. What I've laid out is just a few of the highlights that will change lives and better and build stronger families in our state. I'm sure by now you've received many emails, you've seen much of the publicity around this conference report. My feedback so far has been overwhelmingly in support of this conference report. In working with our governor, and I think that was strategically was an important move by the leadership to sit down with the governor early on in the process and his budget staff, the governor has indicated he will sign this bill. And I ask every member here for your support. More important, the citizens of North Carolina ask for your support for this historic budget. Today, every member of this House has a simple choice. You can be partisan and vote no, or you can vote yes and be part of history. I encourage you to vote green.
Gentleman from the Union, Representative Arts, recognized to debate the conference report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This budget is a good budget. In fact, this budget is historic and transformative for North Carolina. This budget is the right budget for the citizens of North Carolina right now. Part of what makes this budget historic and transformative is the additional capital dollars, over $9.6 billion debt-free. $6 billion in the State Capital Infrastructure Fund, $3.6 billion in federal ARPA funds and other dollars. We all knew that the great news that North Carolina had over a $6.5 billion surplus. We also all agree that it's unwise to pay for ongoing expenses, or what we call reoccurring expenses, like salaries, with dollars that we only have one time. Therefore, these dollars and the federal relief dollars are best spent for the benefit of North Carolinians in one-time capital expenses, like our state buildings and universities, community colleges, both new and desperately needed repairs and renovations to fix leaky roofs, plumbing, and to invest in energy-efficient upgrades. To invest in our K-12 schools, both new and renovations. To invest in clean drinking water, safe sewer infrastructure, and stormwater systems, parks and trails, and of course, expanding effective high-speed broadband. From Alamance to Yancey County, there's not one corner of this state that is untouched by this budget. This is what this good budget does. It invests $6 billion in our communities, state buildings, and universities, $195.1 million in parks and trails and PARTF, land and water fund, $808 million in the lottery funds going to K-12 school construction, and more in years to come. $1.8 billion in water and sewer. Over $1 billion for broadband. All of this over the two-year biennium. The planned capital dollars for over the next 5.5 years is $11.2 billion. And unlike Congress and the federal budget, this North Carolina plan does it debt-free. In fact, unlike Congress, this North Carolina plan reduces the total state debt over that lifetime by 60%. This is not a nudge toward progress. This is breaking the logjam. This budget is paying today for our children's tomorrow, not our children's future paying for our today. I urge everyone, seize the opportunity to do good for so many people and vote for this budget. Thank you.
Gentleman from Cumberland, Representative Zucker, is recognized to debate the conference report.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, frequently a good measure of success is not what we say about ourselves, but it's about what others say about us. Forbes, Best Business State for 2021, we're ranked number one. Site Selection Magazine 2021, Prosperity Cup, number one top business climate. CNBC 2021, top space for business, we ranked number two. Area Development Magazine 2021, a Gold Shovel Award. These were not given by accident. They were given because we have promised and we have delivered. Let me read you a quote from somebody that's back from January 14th, 2020. It's a little, almost 2 years old, but I think it's very effective still. North Carolina's cost-effective business environment is clear across several measures, including construction costs, which are 16% below the national average in metropolitan areas,
The state's industrial electricity costs are about 10% below the U.S. average. In fact, North Carolina's labor, energy, and tax costs are well below the national average, according to Forbes. It was true then, it's true now. And this gentleman also said, well, North Carolina is grateful for the recognition of business rankings. There is nothing more valuable than the vote of confidence from companies choosing to locate or expand in the state. Those words were said by Governor Cooper, our governor. I agree 100% back then, and I agree 100% right now. And the thing about companies moving here, it's not just about corporate taxes. It's also about personal taxes. It's about what kind of life that companies who choose to locate or expand here can offer to their owners and their employees. I'd like to highlight what we've done in personal income tax. A little less than 10 years ago, the highest personal tax income rate was 7.75%. Today it stands at 5.25%. Over the next 6 years, it's going to go to 3.99%. And like Representative Arp stated here, we're not like Washington, D.C. We're able to pay for the things that we do, and we're able to afford these tax cuts. The standard deduction. Frequently, we're criticized, we being all of us, because we're all in the legislature, for taking taxes down too low because it's said that we neglect the most needy among us, those who are beginning at the lower end of the economic scale. And we don't care about them, and the tax cuts only go to the rich. This legislature, for the past several terms, has addressed that very issue, where we have the zero income tax rate, also called the zero standard deduction. Currently, it stands at $21,500, meaning the first $21,500 of married filing jointly income is not taxed. This budget takes that to $25,500. That is a huge increase, as it takes tens of thousands of taxpayers off the state tax rolls, and those are the folks who can least afford to pay tax. Those are the folks where it makes the biggest difference. When you combine that with the effective tax rate by lowering rates, we are really helping people at the lower end of the income scale, which is, I think, something that we all agree that we need to focus on, and this budget does that. It increases the child deduction by $500 and raises the income limitation on that. And finally, in personal income tax, this budget includes House Bill 83, which is eliminating income tax, state income tax on military retirement pensions. That passed this chamber by an overwhelming margin, almost unanimous. It's been gone back and forth between us and the Senate in negotiations. And as I told folks on Veterans Day at a speech I gave, that this is the type of thing which will truly make North Carolina the most military and veteran-friendly state in the Union. We say that we are. Until this budget passes, this was the piece that was lacking. I told you on this floor months ago that estimates were that this would pay for itself within 2 years. I won't name them, but there's a high-ranking general in this state who's looking at retiring, and his choice was Florida or Tennessee unless this bill passed. Since this became published on Monday, I've had calls from Colorado where a military retiree wants to come home. Home, here, and he is moving home because of this. I've had calls from Oregon. I've had calls from Norfolk, where the Master Sergeants Association there is deliberating these things. Ladies and gentlemen, for no other reason to vote for this budget, I strongly suggest that this is reason enough. I encourage you to vote for the budget. Thank you.
The gentleman from Mecklenburg, Representative Bradford, is recognized to debate the conference report.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Chairman Zoka is right. We have some amazing accolades that we've received on our business climate here in North Carolina, but we did receive one here. North Carolina ranks number 10 by the Tax Foundation for 2021 State Business Tax Climate Index. What that means is we still have work to do, folks. We're business friendly, but we can do more. This budget continues to move the needle for businesses in our great state. For example, this budget will phase out corporate income tax. In 2014, our corporate income tax was 6.9%. This body put us on a path to get us to 2.5% today. But this budget will put us on a new path, which will phase corporate tax to 0% by the year 2030. This sends an incredible signal to the whole country, to states with high taxation, that North Carolina is open for business. If you're doing business in North Carolina, we want you to stay here. We want you to grow here. And if you're thinking about fleeing another state because, frankly, you're tired of bloated tax policies, well, we hope you'll give us a look. The franchise tax, also known as privilege tax in other states. Right now, we calculate our franchise tax using a three-leg approach. Two of those legs are based on property value. This is a disincentive for businesses that are here to grow their businesses, to buy land, to build buildings, to expand. Well, this budget removes those two legs and now focuses on one prong only, which is net worth. It's based on revenue apportionment for the revenue that you do in our state and our state only. That's a wonderful thing for businesses that want to grow and invest in our state and create jobs. The PPP, there are 239,000 businesses in North Carolina that took over $17.3 billion worth of PPP loans to employ 2.2 million people. Well, North Carolina, in this budget, we're finally going to get it done. We're going to conform to the federal standard that businesses who took that PPP loan for the sole purpose of making sure you can pay your employees, and the requirement of the loan was to spend every penny, exhaust every cent to pay those employees. And until this budget, they're facing a tax burden. The federal government has already relaxed that tax burden, and North Carolina has not conformed. Well, today, members, colleagues, we have a chance to conform. If you are business friendly, you have an opportunity to prove it today by voting for this budget, and I hope you will. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Members, the chair intends to call on Representative Sane last, and the chair does have one light on right now. So if there are any other members who want to speak, go ahead and turn your light on, because I'm getting ready to call on Representative Morey. And after that, unless there are any other lights on, the chair is going to go to Representative Sane and let him close before we take a vote. So with that said, the lady from Durham, Representative Morey, is recognized to debate the conference report.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And I hate to burst the bubble a little bit, but I'm going to speak on some of the issues that I see in this budget and the concerns that I have. First of all, I really appreciate Representative Zoka, Representative Arp, Representative Lamboth, for your presentations, for your hard work, for all these months. We are here on the 158th day, November 18th, 4.5 months late, to vote on a budget that was due on our fiscal year that started July the 1st. As reported, once again, North Carolina comes in last, the last state in the nation to pass a budget. So today, here we are in triple overtime. Everyone is tired. Everyone is saying, just pass the budget. $53 billion over 2 years, 627-page document that was dropped online less than 48 hours ago. It has been a budget process that has not been transparent and did not have public input and does not meet the federal mandates about spending the American Rescue Plan dollars that requires transparency, public input, and accountability in the federal regulations. And today we vote on a budget that contains some provisions that have absolutely nothing to do about money, but is about power changes that have already been vetoed by the governor. This should not be a blueprint for when and how we pass a budget that will impact every single person in North Carolina. So today, as each of us weighs our votes on thousands of earmarks and provisions, each of us must decide if the good outweighs the bad or if the bad outweighs the good. And for me, it's not easy, because one side of the scale has a lot of good. And we have just heard that. The infrastructure, the broadband, the capital improvements, the environment, even air conditioning in our prisons, finally. There is some good tax policy that helps families with children and increases the zero tax bracket. And as we have heard, Representative Zoka, we have an A-plus business climate in North Carolina. But is the good good enough? 5% pay raises for teachers and state employees is not enough when we have the money to do better. And with this budget, there is a court order. There is a court mandate that we should be funding the first installment of Leandro at $1.7 billion. We have the money, and it is the constitutional right of our children for a sound basic education. While this budget does raise the minimum age to non-certified school employees, bus drivers, cafeteria workers to $15 an hour, why are we waiting 2 years to do it? Inflation is now. Gas is up. Medical is up. Heat is up. Housing prices is up. They need it now, more so than waiting for 2 years. Then there's the other side of the scale. And this side is what concerns me the most. As you have heard it from day one, we are not expanding Medicaid, which could immediately help over 600,000 children and family in North Carolina. We are moving some agency discretion from DHHS and DEQ, especially in regard to regulation of storm debris removal. And we are voting on policy, policy that has nothing to do with money. It is pure politics to curtail the duties and authorities of the governor during a state emergency and limits the attorney general from doing his job to settle lawsuits. These bills have already been vetoed, and yet we see them again in this budget. And finally, my biggest concern is not as much about today, but it is about the future. This budget calls for the elimination of all corporate taxes, which the majority of North Carolinians oppose. That means $900 million worth of revenue annually will be lost. And most of it will go to corporate shareholders who live outside North Carolina, when this revenue could be used to help education, the environment, mental health, substance abuse, and address the ravages of increasing gun violence. When all tax cuts are added up in this budget and they're fully implemented in 2030, we stand to lose $8 billion annually in revenue. That's 20% of our operating budget. It's a huge price to pay. So I'm asked to vote, weighing the good and the bad, and there is much good. And there was compromise, there were negotiations, it was bipartisan, our governor was included, the hard work that went into it cannot be discounted. And we know the governor said he will sign this budget. But for each of us personally, we have to weigh the values of our constituents and the values that got us elected here. And while I applaud much of the good in this budget, personally and for my constituents, there are too many issues and problems. We did not go far enough. I will vote no. Thank you.
The gentleman from Chatham, Representative Reeves, is recognized to debate the conference report.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I would say that I would echo Representative Morey that it's clear there's a lot of good in this budget. I've been happy about, first and foremost, process. I think it was good, and Representative Lambeth said that best, that we engaged the governor early. I think that was important. I think it was needed, and I think this bill clearly reflects a lot of the priorities that the governor had in his budget. That's important. Our process this whole session has been important, and I've loved seeing a moving towards what could be a really perfect process. This wasn't perfect, no, but, again, we're happy about where we got to with a lot of these issues. You look at the investments that we've made, and especially with education and with state employees, I think that if there was anything that put me in a position where I wanted to see a budget that we could vote yes on, it was the fact that these folks have been sitting and waiting and waiting. And when we go through all the rhetoric and all the discussion that happens sometimes out in the media and out in, you know, on the political views, what we forget is that some of our most valuable assets are our people. And those people have been needing raises forever. I remember when I first got in office 8 years ago, talking to people, magistrates, you know, city work, state workers, things of that sort, who were talking about the fact that they hadn't never gotten their step raises, hadn't been able to get here, hadn't been able to get there. Obviously, you know, we've talked about the fact that teachers haven't been able to get it. And so it's great to see some raises. They need that. They need to know that we recognize them, that we hear them, and that we want them to do well. Could we have done better? Yes, because this is a historic amount of money that we've got to bestow on people. And when I say we could do better, what I would like to make clear is, again, sometimes we get caught in rhetoric. And so when we hear, hey, we could spend some more money, then sometimes that makes us retreat into our corners of, well, Democrats just want to spend more money, and then Republicans don't want to spend money. And like Representative Zoka just said, that's not fair to say that somebody does or doesn't care. It's different theories of government and where you want to make your investments, because when people pay us their tax money, they're paying us to invest. That's it. It's not my money, your money, it's not anybody's money. It's money that they're saying that you can do more with this dollar than I can. If I give you this dollar, you can invest it in roads. You can invest it in education. You can invest it in broadband at a cheaper rate than I could do or me and my family could do. And that's what we're here for. And that's what I think of when I think of a budget. And that's why I feel like for all the great things, there are things we could have done better. So, for instance, with education, we could have come closer to trying to make a sound basic education available to everyone, because that is an advantage to all of us. No one's ever walked into a community and said there's too much education among these people. No business has ever gone to locate and said, I can't locate here, your folks are too smart. They got too much training. What it is the opposite. Because I think a lot about economic development, because things change so rapidly. Businesses that were the business that you wanted to have just 5 years ago are now almost defunct. I was talking to a family member this weekend about when the computer revolution came through. And we were talking about all the companies, and I know the representative saying working in this state remembers. You remember Compaq, you remember Digital, you remember all these companies. And if you had a chance to buy stock, you ran to get that stock. And then literally within a couple of years, those companies were gone and eaten up. And so we've always got to stay progressive about our investments. Education is one of those spots we're going to have to invest in. And we've got to invest in all of our people. We talk about school choice a lot up here, but it stops being a choice when the public education system isn't working anymore. Once that happens, there isn't a choice. There is the, I can afford to pay for a charter or private school, or I have to go to the school that doesn't work. But we have invested, and we've invested more than we saw in the earlier reports, and I'm happy about that. But we've got to keep that fight going. Then when we talk about taxes, a lot of the tax rankings we've had, and this is not to incur any partisan wrath, but a lot of those rankings that we had in business, we had those rankings in 2010 also. Business rankings happen because of years of policy. Our investments in RTP and the UNC, NC State, North Carolina A&T, and those universities, that's what paid off to make businesses want to come here and want to still come here. We've got to continue those investments. So yes, it's great that we have done something to attract business and that tax is part. Tax is a part of it, but we've already got one of the lowest tax rates in the country. So with that being said, at some level, everybody's got to pay what they owe. It's good to help out the person that we've reduced their taxes that's making $35,000 a year, but they're still paying taxes. And that tax dollar they're paying hurts so much more than that corporate tax dollar does. And corporations want to have a workforce to choose from, educational systems that they can get their workers from. They want to have good infrastructure. They want to have all these amenities that come with living in a prosperous state. So I've been very happy about the fact that we have done those investments, and I'm happy about seeing us do things for folks on the lower economic end of the tax bracket. But again, let's try to keep focusing to do more. I think when you look through these points, you know, again, money we've added to education, getting people up to $15 an hour, getting the bonuses that we've got to our state employees, getting a good COLA bonus. Retirees are really happy with that. Getting the money that we're getting to attract more veterans in this state is important. That goes to a lot of factors and a lot of showing about what we care about and what we value, because that's what a budget is something that shows what we value. But we've got the opportunity to do more. I mean, if you look at some of the earmarks that we talked about or that Representative Morey referred to, take those earmarks, stick those along with the $1 billion we're putting in broadband, we'd be that close to putting high-speed internet into every spot in this state. But again, choices have to be made. So I'm happy about the $1 billion investment because that is sorely, sorely, sorely needed. If you've got one thing that can help a rural economy, especially after coming out of this pandemic, is going to be our investment in high-speed internet. Because folks don't have to go to brick-and-mortar offices and buildings anymore to work. They can work from home. And imagine what we could do if we went out into some of these counties that haven't been able to track some of these companies because of loss of population and all types of factors, and we're able to get them at least where they're viable with the internet. Think all the way back to what happened with Wilson trying to save themselves and keep BB&T. Those are the type of opportunities that we missed this time, but that we can still keep working on. But we are starting by investing the money that we've invested. And that $1 billion is going to go a long way. But on the flip side, I do have to say that we still kept getting policy in here. Is the policy as bad as it was? No. And I would commend, as Representative Lamoth did, the work that was done on both sides of the aisle to try to get rid of some of that policy. I think the governor obviously did his work. Our conferees that were on the budget report did a lot of good work to try to help this happen. And so we got rid of a lot of bad policy, but we still kept sneaking policy in there. We still kept sneaking in provisions that we really don't need to sneak in. Let's have full and fair debate about these issues, talk about them, decide what's best. And as I always say, don't presume what people feel about some of these provisions. Because when we do these provisions, for instance, with gubernatorial powers, the one thing all of us know in here is nobody knows who the next governor is going to be. So let's make something that functions for the next governor. Let's put in rules that functions for the next AG, but also making sure that we keep co-equal branches of government. Everybody's got a role, and those roles are important in order to make a real community work and a real state and a government work. But with all that being said, what I'm happy about is that this budget looks so different from the budgets that were submitted from the Senate. And of course, we knew we were going to do better in the Senate. I was good on that. But also with the budget that was submitted from the House. And again, this isn't a criticism in the sense of you did bad, I would have done so much better. It's a, we have some fundamental differences in how we view the role of government. And what I think government ought to be every day, and every single dollar that we invest of the people's money should be towards making sure that every single person within the borders of this state has their opportunity to be the best that they can be. We can't make anything happen for anybody. We can't give anything. I don't think we should give things to people, but we should give them opportunity. We shouldn't make it that your zip code, your background, or any other factors determines who you're going to be or what you're going to be in this state. I want every single child that goes to a school in this state to have the opportunity to be a CEO of a Fortune 500 company. I want every single child that is in this, within the borders of this state, to have the opportunity to have a great education and then use that to become some of our great military heroes, our law enforcement heroes, our educators, our frontline workers. Think about the exposure that a little child gets to science in some small county or community that sparks that child's belief that she or he could be a doctor, nurse, or somebody else working to save lives, and how that person could end up being the person that saves one of your family members' lives. But they don't get that opportunity if we don't invest. So as we go through, we're going to vote on this budget today, and I'm voting for the budget because I support process and I support compromise, and that's what good government is. Good government is walking out of a deal knowing that neither of you got everything that you wanted, but you came to the best result that you could between the two of you, and that is what I feel has happened here completely. I believe negotiations were done in good faith. I think that everybody has worked hard. I commend the budget chairs. for meeting with the governor's budget folks. And I know as much as the speaker and the president pro tem and the governor met and Leader Blue and I, you guys had to do all the hard work of working out those nuts and bolts. And I'm telling you, I appreciate that because I heard nothing but good things from the governor's people about those discussions. And that meant a lot. But we've still got work we've got to do, and we're going to still keep fighting for that work. And I don't believe that a vote no, because I know some people will vote no on this. There may be Republicans that vote no on this. A no vote doesn't mean that you're being partisan. A no vote means that you disagree about the good and the bad and what the role of government is. Let's make our government the best government it can be for our people and continue the process that we started today. Thank you.
Members, the chair sees no other lights on other than Representative Sain's, and the chair intends to call on Representative Sain last. So if there are any other members seeking recognition to vote on the conference report, please hit your light now. Seeing none, the gentleman from Lincoln, Representative Sain, is recognized to debate the conference report.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you, members. You know, maybe it's appropriate that we are here right before Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving in the Bible means to respond to God's goodness and grace with gratitude. While our state has many challenges, we still have so much for which to be grateful. To you, my colleagues, I want to say thank you and how grateful I am for all of you. You have all been a part of this process. Whether you intend to vote in favor of this conference report or not, you have all been great advocates for the people in your districts and for all people in our great state. This process has been intentional. I was talking to a reporter prior to session today, and I remarked about how refreshing it has been to take a different approach. Good things happen when people listen to each other and attempt to work through their differences. This budget reflects just that. On Saturday, I received a text from a member on the other side of the aisle who offered their sincere thanks for the funding for our historically black colleges and universities. I didn't ask if that meant they would support that with their vote today, though I did wonder. But speaking to my friend today, he offered that he would indeed support this effort with his vote in favor of the budget. Reporters have also asked me if I thought this was a big win for the House and the Senate and perhaps a loss for the governor. Truly, this is a win for everyone. Most importantly, the people of this state. Throughout this process, the executive branch and the legislative branch were intentional in their talks and discussions, truly finding out what pressure points that there were, where they were divided, where we agreed, and where there might be room to reach a consensus. Again, I want to thank you all because you were all part of this process. With your vote in favor of this budget conference report today, each and everyone in this body can take part in the victory lap for the people of North Carolina. And I was asked to close out this debate, and you know, I love baseball. I love baseball references. But we are always closers for the people of this state. Let's celebrate this win. Mr. Speaker, I humbly ask for the adoption of the conference report.
Members will now move into a vote. The question before the House is the adoption of the conference report for Senate Bill 105 on a second roll call reading. All those in favor will signify by voting aye. All those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Speaker Moore, aye. Representative Dale will be shown as being excused. Clerk will like machine the court of the vote. 104 having the vote in the affirmative and 10 in the negative. Conference report is passed and will remain on the calendar.
On a roll. Let's see if we can do that with all the remaining bills we have today and tomorrow. House Bill 91, the clerk will read.
Actually, before we do that, I do want to do, I see a lot of the central staff are leaving.
Just a couple things would point out, and Representative Lambeth mentioned this earlier. This, of course, is unusually late in the year for us to be passing the budget. And I think it's worth pointing out that this state has faced very unique challenges this year that a couple of years ago none of us could have imagined. But I think it's also availed a number of opportunities. And I think that the process that eventually here in November got us to having this budget that we should view as though it was hard, but it is certainly an opportunity for us to continue trying to get things done and to get things done across the aisle. But I do need to give a special recognition to the central staff and to our staff and staff and all folks who really have worked hard to make this possible by getting what is a very complex and complicated process into something that we could take care of and take care of this business for all the people of North Carolina. I would simply ask my colleagues if we could publicly thank our central staff who have really helped make this possible, as well as our court. Please join me in thanking them. And if any of the checks bounce, call central staff as well. House Bill 91, I believe, has been called to be read. The clerk will read.
Conference report. House Bill 91. Representatives Bell, Lambert, Hay Baker, and Sane. A bill to be entitled Accountability and Fair Play in Athletics. General Assembly of North Carolina next.
Chairman from Wayne, Majority Leader, Representative Bell, is recognized for motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that we approve the conference report.
Representative Bell's moved that the House adopt the conference report to House Bill 91, and the gentleman has the floor to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This conference report is a result of work and a bipartisan deal with the High School Athletic Association, the State Board of Education, the Governor's Office, and all the conferees on both sides of the aisle in both chambers. And I ask for your green vote. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Wayne, Representative Smith, rise?
Speak on the conference report. The
gentleman has the floor.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is probably one of the most unnecessary bills that I've seen since I've been here. I thought voting on frozen treats was unnecessary, but this is absolutely unnecessary. This bill is attempting to fix a problem that doesn't exist. The North Carolina High School Athletic Association has been in existence since 1912. And not since 1912 has this body chosen to act in any way, shape, form, or fashion to interfere with the last, in my humble opinion, pure amateur athletics, which is high school sports. We've tainted college sports with betting and allowing college athletes to get endorsements. We've tainted pro sports with betting. So why are we interfering in high school sports? It's the last amateur, truly pure amateur sports that we have in the state of North Carolina. And I stand before you and I ask you to vote against this conference report.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question for the House is the adoption of the conference report to House Bill 91. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Harrison, Representative Harrison, no. Thank you. Clerk will lock the machine, record the vote. 76 having voted in the affirmative and 38 in the negative. The conference report to House Bill 91 is adopted. The bill is ordered enrolled and sent to the governor. Senate Bill 219, the clerk will read.
Senator McInnes, Senate Bill 219, a bill to be entitled an act to revise the educational requirements for licensure of a professional land surveyor to make various technical changes to clarify the design bill and design bill bridging statutes and prohibit waiver of future claims and process payments to the construction contract and to require attorney's fees in certain lien claims. General Assembly of North Carolina next.
The gentleman from Union, Representative Arp, is recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. What I would do is try to explain this. This is surveyors. This revises the requirements for surveyors to obtain licensure. It works better to get more surveyors out there while still maintaining health and safety of the public. And this also combines with some of the changes in House Bill 820, which was passed 104 to this body, and I ask for your support, and I stand for any questions.
What purpose, the gentleman from Union, Representative Brody, rise.
To speak on the bill, please.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, members. This was added today to today's calendar, so unfortunately I was scrambling to read the whole thing of it, and it's quite long. But I wanted to address just one part of it. It's dealing with the surveyors. And it's interesting because if you look at, if you actually read it and find out what the requirements are, you'll find that it changed quite a bit. Although currently I can understand why there's very few surveyors, because it's very difficult. You can get on with a bachelor's degree in surveying. Used to be, or now you don't need any experience, but now you need 2 years, which is fine. But only one university in our system offers a degree in surveying. That's NCANT. If you can get on with an associate, you can right now with associates, two-year associates, but with 4 years of experience. But now they're going 2 years associates, and now they want 5 years of experience. You can get on now with a high school, but you realize you have to spend 16 years to become a surveyor as a high school graduate. And right now, they're lowering it down to 9 years. And of course, before they never had apprenticeships, and now they have apprenticeship, 1 year and 7 years of experience, and only seven community colleges in North Carolina offer that. The reason why I brought it up is, kind of in a dilemma. If I vote against this, we vote against this. We're back to the 16 years, all those other things. But yet, let's look at some equivalents. What do we call somebody who goes to university and medical school after 8 years? We call them a doctor. What do we call a lawyer who goes to, undergrad and 3 years of graduate? We call them an attorney. How about an engineer? 4 years. You can be practicing engineering. You can talk to Representative McNeil here. Just out of curiosity, how long of education you need to become a police officer, sheriff? You get that training. You don't need any high school. I mean, you need high school, but you don't need any provide you with that training. So what we're seeing is in the construction industry, is a shortage of people to do a lot of work. And this was one of them that would caught my attention, because I used to constantly ask my community college president, why don't we have a program in surveying, because we're so short of surveyors? And of course, she never answered me, and of course, I guess she found out this is why. There's already several, and to get into surveying, it's a long process. I wanted you to tell you this, because I can't vote against the bill, because what's left is something really bad. But this is going to come up again next year, I can guarantee you it. And along with a number of other things, that what we're trying to do is we're either using education inflation to add to something that can be a really good technical degree. We're adding more time. I don't understand why we went from 4 years to 5 years with the associate's degree, but nonetheless we do. Part of the problem, we can't find people that are going to do some of these jobs, is we are just making it difficult to get into those positions. And this is one of those areas that's desperately needed. It's a piece of the construction industry that is required, but yet we're making it so difficult to get into it. So what I'd ask is, we vote for the bill. Obviously, I don't want to go back to where we were, but at the same token, be aware that this is going to come around next year by me, and we're going to put this in some kind of equivalent portfolio where we can get these people that are educated, know what they're doing, but yet don't have to spend an enormous amount of time under the supervision of somebody when they can learn that within fewer years. Thank you very much.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question for the House is the passage of Senate Bill 219 on second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Harrison, aye. The clerk will lock the machine, record the vote. 112 having voted in the affirmative and 2 in the negative. Senate Bill 219 passed the second reading without objection. Will be read a third time.
General Assembly of North Carolina next.
For purpose of gentleman from Mecklenburg, Representative Majeed Rice.
I'll change my vote, sir.
How would the gentleman like to be recorded?
House Bill 91 to no.
On 91? I'm sorry, I didn't understand. Could you?
House Bill 91, no.
The gentleman will be recorded as having voted no on House Bill 91. For what purpose? The gentleman from Scotland, Representative Pierce Rice.
Same request, Mr. Speaker, on 91 to a no vote, please. Thank you.
The gentleman will be recorded as having voted no on House Bill 91. For what purpose does the lady from Forsyth, Representative Terry Rice?
To do likewise, Mr. Speaker.
The lady will be recorded as having voted no on House Bill 91.
Thank you.
Question for the House is the passage of Senate Bill 219 on its third reading. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. Senate Bill 219, having passed third reading, is ordered returned to the Senate by special messenger. And Mr. Clerk, Chair directed all the bills going back to the Senate go by special messenger, sir. For what purpose does the lady from Wake, Representative Ball, rise?
Mr. Speaker, I need to be recorded as voting no on House Bill 91, conference report.
Lady will be recorded as having voted no on House Bill 91. House Bill 165, the clerk will read.
House Bill 165, a bill to be entitled DOT Legislative Changes, General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
Gentleman from Columbus, Representative Jones, recognized for motion.
I move that we do approve the conference report, Mr. Speaker.
Gentleman's move that the House adopt the conference report. The gentleman has the floor to debate the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This just came over from the Senate with a 48-0 vote. It has been a great bipartisan work to get to this place for the DOT, and I ask for your green vote.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question for the House is the adoption of the conference report to House Bill 165. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Harrison, no. Representative Dahl, Representative Majeed, wish to vote? Clerk will lock machine, record the vote. 111 having voted in the affirmative and 3 in the negative. The conference report to House Bill 165 is adopted. Chair directs that the bill be ordered and enrolled and sent to the governor by a special messenger. In fact, Mr. Clerk, Chair directs that all messages to the governor as well be sent by a special messenger. House Bill 978, Corporal Reed.
Rules, calling and operations of the House. House Bill 978, a bill to be entitled an act to make modifications to appointments made in the 2021 appointments bill and to appoint persons of various public offices upon a recommendation of the Speaker of the House of Representatives and the President Pro Tem of the Senate, General Assembly of North Carolina next.
Gentleman from Caldwell, Representative Hall is recognized to debate the bill.
Members, this bill makes technical corrections to previous appointments bills, and it adds a small number of the Speaker's appointments. I don't know of any controversy surrounding the bill. I hope you'll support it.
For what purpose, gentleman from Durham, Representative Hawkins, rise?
Inquiry of the chair.
Gentleman's recognized.
Related to, and I think I brought this up the last time that we had an appointments bill by the leadership of the House and the Senate, is just trying to get the timing of when we should be, you know, placing forth nominations for these and to make sure that we sort of get the heads up that we need to be a part of the process. Because I'm pretty consistent, so I asked the same question the last time. And because I think, as we all know, that, you know, a lot of these positions are making, you know, pretty major decisions on the boards that they are appointed to. And I generally have the fortune of knowing a lot of the names that I see move forward. And unfortunately, I don't today. And so just as we go through it, and also for the pleasure of the body, if there's an opportunity for us to sort of say, you know, at the end of the session or this time or that time, that, hey, this is an opportunity for us to send forth names or to interview folks or to know sort of who they are. That will be, you know, welcome. And then also what I do as a legislator, because I really appreciate the service of people who serve on our various boards, I send a letter, no matter sort of where they are, so they know that we are looking forward to them making a good job and making good decisions on our behalf. So I just wanted to give that inquiry to the chair to see if we could get a little bit of a heads up and to sort of ask and, you know, outline a little bit of a process.
So the way we do this is every year at the beginning of session, usually Julie LaSella from my staff will send an email out to all members basically advising that we have various boards and commissions. There are just tons and tons of boards and commissions. And if individuals would like to submit names or nominations, that they're invited to do so. And so that's essentially an open process. And so I would invite the gentleman, as well as anyone else who wants to see what seats, for example, may come open next year, to go ahead and make that inquiry. I think that's something we can easily provide. And if you have names you want to submit those names, and we'll take them into consideration. We've been very fortunate that we have received nominations from folks on both sides of the aisle, from across this chamber. In fact, we received nominations from the general public or from other folks who were interested to a number of these boards and commissions, and we really do work hard to try to find folks who represent all sorts of diversity, and, you know, try to make sure we have folks from all ends of the state, from different backgrounds, and so it's very, very pleased with these. This is just this bill today, Representative Hawkins, is basically clean up a lot of technical corrections. You see, like, the county names and so forth were changed. We did have a vacancy of a resignation for the UNC Wilmington board that was replaced, and I think there were a couple of other that were done, but all of these folks who are on here were carefully vetted through the process. They had to go through the SEI process to make sure they didn't have any conflicts. And I just have to tip my hat to Ms. LaSalle on my staff. She spends many, many, many hours working through this process. But that would be the point of contact. So if you have someone that you're interested in, I just reach out to her. Her office is just out there, and let her know that you have an interest, and that we can certainly make sure that if you have someone who's interested, that we'll give them due consideration. Any further discussion or debate? If not, question for the House. Is the passage of House Bill 978 on second reading? Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Harrison, no. Clerk will lock the machine, record the vote. 105 having voted in the affirmative, 9 in the negative. House Bill 978 passed second reading without objection. Be read a third time.
Johnson of North Carolina acts.
I see some whites. If those are vote changes, if you would just turn those off so we can get this vote knocked out. Question for the House: is the passage of House Bill 978 on third reading? Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. House Bill 978 having passed third reading. Bill's order sent to the Senate by special messenger. Okay, I saw a couple. Representative McGee, is this for a vote change?
Yes, sir.
What is it, sir?
House Bill 165. Yes.
Gentleman be recorded as having voted aye on House Bill 165. Representative Moss, do you have a vote change, sir?
219 aye, please.
The gentleman be recorded as having voted aye on Senate Bill 219. But let's deal with vote changes first. Unless there's a vote change, please turn your light off, and then I'll come back to that. Representative Cunningham, is this a vote change?
Yes, sir. House Bill 91, no.
Lady will be recorded as having voted no on House Bill 91. Are any further vote changes? We'd like to get those knocked out now so that these bills can be sent where they need to go. Last call. All right, we're done. No more vote changes today. All right, for what purpose does the gentleman from Gaston, Representative Hastings, rise?
Mr. Speaker, if it's in order, a question of privilege.
The gentleman has the floor.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I wanted to take just a few moments and mention an incident that happened earlier in the year when we were debating the budget, and a member questioned the fact that we did not have a Capitol Committee meeting, and at the time I didn't respond because, frankly, I was preoccupied and tired. We were just trying to help process a lot of the requests through. And, of course, I had a father who had a serious fall this year and a mother-in-law who had cancer, and my mom had a stroke. We also had trouble with an extended family member that was emotional and time-consuming. And then we had a transition in our office. But I wanted to take just a moment to respond to that and let everybody know that we consulted with the speaker's staff and our central staff, and there is precedent of not having committee meetings and just working the process to have language submitted through the speaker's office or others to get it into bill drafting for the budget. But I just wanted to let that person know, and I don't really think I remember who it was, that there was really no nefarious activity. We were just trying to efficiently get the work done, and frankly, I was just emotionally and mentally preoccupied. So I just wanted to end, as we're ending the session and stay within my 3 minutes, I just wanted to let the person know that, as I said earlier, there was nothing furtive going on or nefarious. We were just trying to find the most efficient way possible to get the request submitted, and every member had an opportunity to submit those requests. And thank you for the time for the question or privilege, sir.
Yes, sir. For what purpose does the gentleman from Cabarrus, Representative Pittman, rise?
Sir, I have two quick points of personal privilege.
The gentleman is recognized to speak to 2 points of personal privilege.
Thank you, sir. The first one, you know, in our lives along the way, we come across somebody that's really wonderful and spend the rest of our lives thanking God we know them. 49 years ago in September, I met a young lady named Tammy. And it's hard to believe it's been that long. But yesterday was her birthday. And I'm not going to tell you how old she was, but she was 14 when I met her. Anyway, Tammy is my legislative assistant. A lot of y'all know her, so I just want to let you know she had a birthday yesterday, and if you see her, you might want to say something to her about it. She just got back home yesterday from spending a few days down in South Carolina. Our daughter had some extensive surgery last Wednesday. And Tammy went down there Saturday when Renee got home from the doctor, from the hospital, in order to, spend some time with her and take care of her. She came home yesterday, and I'm tickled to death to get her back. But happy birthday, Tammy. I love you. The second thing, I think veterans here might be particularly interested in this one. This past Thursday on Veterans Day, I had the privilege of attending a very special ceremony. We have a lot of veterans buried in Oakwood Cemetery in Concord, including the only female recipient of the Congressional Medal of Honor. But the special event that we had this past Thursday was for a very special gentleman who served in our armed forces, Lieutenant Colonel Samuel I. Parker, known to family and friends as Cy Parker. Now, his gravestone is just a little thing that's smaller than a toaster oven. But there are veterans groups in the area who go through and they check out veterans' graves and stuff, and they look into their records, and they were amazed at what they found out when they looked up Lieutenant Colonel Parker. This was a very valiant soldier who most people didn't even know anything about. He was born in 1891 and in Monroe, lived many years in Concord, and died in 1975, and they put that little marker there. But when the veterans groups got to looking into his record, they discovered that buried in Oakwood Cemetery in Concord was Colonel Parker, the most highly decorated veteran of World War I. And we didn't even know he was there. And they said, we got to do something about this. And they spent about 7 or 8 months raising money and going through a lot of red tape. And he managed to get a monument put by his grave that was unveiled on Thursday, with a lot of his family being able to be in attendance. And on that monument is a brief portion of his record in World War I, in which he led an attack on a German machine gun emplacement. He was wounded, I think, about 3 times or something like that, and wouldn't quit, just kept going, and led his soldiers in that attack and was there when they destroyed that machine gun emplacement. And it is said of Colonel Parker that the Germans weren't all that sure that they were in a war when they were just fighting the British and the French. But when Colonel Parker arrived on the scene, they found out they were really in a war, because this man was ferocious. He was deeply dedicated and just exemplified the valor and determination and commitment of our military, who have made us free and kept us free ever since the Revolution. And this monument that they erected is just beautiful. It's about as tall as Representative Kyle Hall. You know, it's a pretty tall monument. Just a beautiful thing. He received the Congressional Medal of Honor, I believe, for that engagement, as well as, about a dozen decorations, including the Silver Star and Purple Heart. The Riders Group of American Legion Post 51 and the VFW in the area worked very hard to get this monument up, and all of us were very much agreed that it's about time. So we're very proud in Concord of Lieutenant Colonel Cy Parker. God bless his family.
Thank you, sir. For what purpose does the lady from Mecklenburg, Representative Carney, rise?
For a point of personal privilege.
The lady has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and ladies and gentlemen of the House. I want to give you some statistics from the year 1941. Some of us in this room might remember way back then, and some of us may not. But a new house in 1941 cost $3,050. A new car cost $850. A dozen eggs, 40 cents. Today, what? They're $3 and $4 a dozen. A gallon of milk was 34 cents, and a gallon of gas, 19 cents. Pretty impressive from how far we have come since then. There were two well-known people that were born in 1941, Bernie Sanders and Dick Cheney, bipartisan, two strong Democrat and a strong Republican. Also, the U.S. population was 133,400,000. And on this day, in 1941, the president signed a bill establishing the fourth Thursday in November as Thanksgiving Day in the United States. But there was one other important thing that happened in 1941. This young man sitting next to me was born this past Monday, and he's celebrating his milestone birthday. That is 80 years young. So join me in wishing him a very happy birthday. And we're thankful you're here.
Happy birthday. For what purpose does the gentleman from Cumberland, Representative Soka, rise?
To be recognized for a point of personal privilege.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, we have a lot of traditions here in the House. Some of them are good, some not so good. One of the not so good traditions we have is frequently we do things late. I don't think he's listening to me. But gaveling in late in a committee or perhaps here in the chamber. Missing things, postponing meetings, and I stand before you guilty of being a week late. I should have known when somebody was doing a point of personal privilege a week ago on the 10th of November on the Marine Corps birthday. But it completely went over my head. I don't know what happened to me, but, the gentleman sitting to my left right here, Phil Shepard, it was his birthday. He worked 36 years for the Marine Corps. I apologize to you for missing it, but in the long tradition, standing in the House, better late than not at all, please join me in wishing Phil a happy birthday.
What purpose, gentleman from Durham, Representative Hawkins, rise?
Point of personal privilege.
The gentleman has the floor.
Mr. Speaker, I rise for a few points of privilege. First is today is November 17th, which 110 years ago the Omega Psi Phi Fraternity Incorporated was founded, of which myself and Representative Raymond Smith are members.
This historically African-American fraternity was founded at Howard University by three juniors and a faculty advisor. It has gone on in the last 110 years to produce some of the finest members of society that the world, again, has ever known. And so if you know an Omega, a member of Omega Psi Phi fraternity, also known as a Q, shake his hand, because that person believes that not only friendship is essential to the soul, but he believes that the world is better when you give yourself of service. And so I want to reach out to all of my brothers across the world and wish them a happy Founders Day. We also are celebrating the 50th anniversary of the University of North Carolina system. In 1970, Governor Scott had a bold idea to consolidate higher public education in North Carolina. Through much conflict, the North Carolina General Assembly, this body, passed it in 1971, and he had this to say. Let us enlarge our understanding and broaden our vision. By adopting this blueprint, we will not surrender our traditions or our ties or our loyalties. We will retain them, yet at the same time, we will rise above our sectionalism and our provincialism. Let us look beyond the trees and behold the forest of all higher education. And so with that vision, he has set forth over the next 50 years what we see today. It is the vision that we have to continually look forward to, because this is the bedrock of which all of the state of North Carolina has been built. It's why companies come to North Carolina. It's why we have some of the most educated people in the world. It's why we have some of the best universities in the world. And I want to go through just a few of those that you may know. Appalachian State, East Carolina, Elizabeth City State University, Fayetteville State, North Carolina A&T State University, North Carolina Central, North Carolina State, UNC Asheville, UNC Chapel Hill, UNC Charlotte, UNC Greensboro, UNC Pembroke, UNC School of the Arts, UNC Wilmington, Western Carolina, Winston-Salem State, and the North Carolina School of Science and Math. Each year, this body of schools and consolidated universities graduates 50,000 students with from 200 degree programs. In 1972, the consolidated system had a student body of 87,000. Today, we boast a system that has 244,000 students that are enrolled in our various universities. We have a four-year aviation program. Five of the state's 10 HBCUs are in our system. We are home to two land-grant institutions, North Carolina State and North Carolina A&T. We have two Research One institutions. We are home to the largest historically black college in the country. We are also, with UNC Chapel Hill, home to the oldest public institution of higher education in the country, as well as North Carolina Central, which is the oldest public historically black college in the nation. We have a lot to be proud of. We have been led. We know that Peter Hans was just installed as our new UNC system president. So, of course, if you get a chance to say to him, if you get a chance to greet him, please welcome him with open arms and wish him well as he pushes forward the vision and the mission that Governor Scott had all these years ago. But past presidents of the UNC system have been the legendary Bill Friday, who was the president from 1956 to 1986. C.D. Spangler Jr., who was the president from 1986 to 1997. Molly Brough was the first woman to serve as a UNC system president from 97 to 2005. Erskine Bowles, 05 to 2010, and Tom Ross, 2011 to 2016, and Margaret Spellings from 2016 to 2019. And so I want to make sure that we recognize this history. The UNC system all this year will be highlighting the accomplishments that we have over the last 50 years, but it's worth to ensure that the investments that we made today and that we will finalize tomorrow will help us build a better North Carolina. So happy 50th to the UNC system. Thank you.
Thank you.
For what purpose does the lady from Orange, Representative Inskeer, rise?
I wish to be recorded as no on 219.
I will, in this case, make an exception. The lady will be recorded as having voted no on Senate Bill 219. The lady did approach the chair. She had not heard the initial admonition, so we'll do it. But that's really the last one. That was it. For what purpose, gentleman from Cumberland, Representative Lucas, rise?
For a point of personal privilege, Mr. Speaker.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank my eloquent seatmate for a job, as usually, well done. It's not often that one reaches 80 years, but that's not all of the celebratory process in the Lucas family for the last week or so. For you see, last Thursday, Veterans Day, my son celebrated his 52nd birthday. You heard that I celebrated 80 on Monday, and today, my son's son celebrates his 24th birthday. So we're continually having birthdays. Thank goodness that we're here in November. You know, I'd like to reflect and imagine how wonderful it has been to reach 80 years. And I just feel like we need to category that experience into silos. The first silo represents growth and aspirations in developing families and careers. That's a 40-year silo. The second silo represents a possession and a slowing with gradual relaxing the pace of life with visions of security and relaxation. Now that I'm embarking upon a third silo, I had to come up with something else. You're always blessed when there's a third silo. And so I envision working toward 4 V's. The first V would be renewed vim. The second, renewed vigor. And the third, renewed vitality toward a virtuous life with the Almighty. This pious relationship is all that one needs to prevent egotistical ambitions and delusions of what a fourth 40-year silo would be like. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Yes, sir. Thank you. For what purpose does the gentleman from Islay, Representative Shepherd, rise?
Point of personal privilege, Mr. Speaker.
Gentleman has the floor.
I was born last week on November the 10th, and I was born in North Carolina Tar Heel. And I think Representative Butler's already gone. But anyway, on behalf of the Speaker and myself and Representative Richardson and many of others in here, the greatest birthday present I could have received was watching Carolina beat those Wake Forest Demon Deacons last week. Go Heels!
Objection.
The wise and well-studied remarks of the gentleman from Onslow will forever be spread upon the Journal of the Hatton. Members, let me give you an update or a heads up on what our planning or scheduling is coming forward. It is the intention of the chair that we conclude our business for this week tomorrow. Our session tomorrow will be at 10 a.m. We've conferred. I believe the Representative Reeves may be off the floor, but I believe there's not going to be any objection to third reading on any of the bills so that we won't have to be here on Friday. And so we're going to take care of the remainder of the bills tomorrow that we have. Not sure if we'll have any other conference reports. We'll let folks know if we do, but I believe what's been added to the calendar should be it. If there is anything, of course, it'll be, we'll make sure folks know. It is the intention of the chair that we not be in session next week, that we'll have skeletal session and no votes. And we will determine if we will be coming back on the 29th. To try to wrap things up, or if we're going to have to come back on the 6th of December to do that. But for the thing you can plan on at this point is that votes tomorrow, session at 10 a.m., and no votes any next week as we go into the end of Thanksgiving holiday and
want folks to be able to spend time with your families. I know many of you will be traveling far-flung parts of the country, and want you to be able to do that without fear, worry of things here. So it has certainly been a long year, but it is appropriate to see that we are finally getting to the end of things, it appears. Any further notices or announcements? For what purpose does the gentleman from Henderson, Representative Moffitt, rise?
For an announcement.
Chairman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Committee on Alcoholic Beverage Control will meet in room 1228, 15 minutes after today's session.
You're a really popular guy for that, I'm sure. For why? You know, somebody talking about an ABC meeting, it's almost 6 o'clock. I'm just not going to go there. For what purpose does the gentleman from Scotland, Representative Pierce, rise?
Mr. Speaker, just to ask a question, inquire of the chair, I think that might be a proper way to ask it. I know that things can change between now and the 6th of December, but for many, that is filing day for those who intend to run again. Are you aware of that? That really doesn't matter in the situation you're trying, the decisions you're trying to make. I'm just only asking about that.
Gentleman's asking me questions I can't answer right now. So I will tell you that the primary other piece of legislation that we're going to need to take care of will be the Budget Technical Corrections Act that just will address, you know, issues with the budget, just typographical issues and those kinds of things. So that's one of them. And of course, whether or not we need to respond to different things as the legislature is something we can't answer right now. So that'll be determined later. But the chair certainly understands the gentleman's question, and I wish I could give you a better answer than that. So, yes, sir.
You say you understood what I was just saying. If we do file on the 6th, I'm asking you whether that was going to change or not. But did you consider that those who might, if it's possible that we're going to file that day, did you consider that, those who might?
Certainly. We can take that into account.
Okay.
For what purpose, gentleman from Gaston, Representative Torbert Rice.
Hopefully the final remarks of the day, Mr. Speaker.
Chairman has four.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think we left one group out to say thank you to. I want to personally say thank you to the Speaker's staff, and they owe me nothing, but they did a tremendous amount of lifting during this whole budget process. Every one of them are tasked with multiple departments to work within, which I mean, I do good working in one. But they're tasked with multiple ones, so we want to specifically say thank you to them. And they wouldn't be the staff they had if it wasn't for the leadership that you provided to many of us in this chamber, Mr. Speaker. I want you not to get out here today before you got your thank you for all you've done as well.
Yes, sir. Thank you for this is certainly a You're very kind to say that, but the reality is anything that I do is simply because this is what this body is doing, so appreciate the honor to do that. As I say, remind folks every day, I work for you all, not the other way around, so thank you for that opportunity. Any further notices or announcements? If not, the gentleman from Caldwell, Representative Hall, recognized for a motion. And this is, by the way, we're going to adjourn in honor and memory of the sheriff we spoke of earlier. If members could please keep their conversation down. The gentleman has four for the motion.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House to now adjourn to reconvene Thursday, November 18th at 10 a.m., subject to the standard stipulation set forth in Rule 15.1 and in memory of Dr. Hubert A. Peterkin.
Representative Hall moves, seconded by Representative Pierce, that the House do now adjourn to reconvene Thursday, November 18th at 10 a.m., subject to the standard stipulations set forth in Rule 15.1 and in honor and memory of Dr. Hubert A. Peterkin. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The House stands adjourned.
A representative statement honoring Dr. Hubert A. Peterkin, whereas Hubert A. Peterkin was born on April 25th, 1962 in Hope County, to the late Hubert and Annie Peterkin, and whereas Hubert A. Peterkin graduated from Hope County High School in 1981 and went on to earn a Bachelor of Applied Sciences in Government Business from Liberty University in 1998 and a Master's in Management in 2010 and a Doctorate in Management in 2020 from the University of Phoenix, and whereas Dr. Peterkin served 34 years in various positions as a law enforcement officer, he served in numerous capacities for the Fayetteville Police Department for 16 years 1998, he was appointed Chief of Deputies for the Hope County Sheriff's Office, and in 2002 was elected to his first of five consecutive terms as Sheriff of Hope County. And whereas during his tenure as Sheriff, Dr. Peterkin served with a seriousness, professionalism, and love of community that was second to none, he received an advanced certification from the North Carolina Sheriff's Education and Training Standards Commission and an advanced certification from the North Carolina Criminal Justice Education and Training Standards Commission. And whereas Sheriff Peterkin was determined to ensure the safety of Hope County citizens and to enhance the performance of the Sheriff's Office staff by implementing improvements in emergency management services, traffic enforcement teams, special operations, drugs, et cetera, great school resources officers program, SCRT, domestic violence, canine, child support enforcement, solid waste enforcement, gang task force, youth academy, summer youth camp, and citizens academy. And whereas Sheriff Peterkin ushered in a new era of law enforcement when the Hope County Sheriff's Office became only the fifth agency in North Carolina to become nationally certified through the Commission on Accreditation for Law Enforcement Agencies. And whereas Sheriff Peterkin served as president of the North Carolina Sheriff's Association in 2015 and chair of the organization's executive board from 2016 through 2018. And whereas Sheriff Peterkin was also an author writing a book in 2018 titled How to Stop for a Cop, Reconnecting Law Enforcement and the Community in his quest to reduce the tension between law enforcement and the public. And whereas Sheriff Peterkin received numerous awards and honors, including the 8th Annual Enrique S. Camara Law Enforcement Award in 2014 and the Order of the Longleaf Pine in 2015. He was also given the key to the city of Rayford in 2015. And whereas Sheriff Peterkin died on October 22, 2021, leaving to mourn his memory his wife, Della A. Peterkin, and his children, Antisha D. Peterkin, LaSwanda Peterkin, and Antonio R. Peterkin. And whereas Sheriff Peterkin was a caring and remarkable man who enriched the lives of many and left an outstanding legacy of commitment to his family and community as servant in his church, volunteer, singer, author, mentor, and law enforcement officer. Now, therefore, as one of the longest-serving sheriffs in North Carolina, Dr. Hubert A. Peterkin deserves to be recognized as a role model for sheriffs and law enforcement professionals throughout the state and commemorated for the service he rendered to his community and law enforcement. In witness whereof, the undersigned certifies the foregoing statement was read in the House and placed upon the journal on the 17th day of November 2021, submitted by Representative Garland, signed House Principal Clerk. Representative Moffitt is recognized to send forth a committee report for the Alcoholic Beverage Control Committee, Senate Bill 470, North Carolina Regulatory Sandbox Act. Favorable House Committee Substitute, Unfavorable Senate Committee Substitute Number 2. Senate Committee Substitute Number 2 is placed on the unfavorable calendar, whereas House Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 470 will be calendar pursuant to Rule 36B for November 18th.